Welcome to On Screen Live, everybody. My name is Andrew Jupin. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, depending upon where you are watching from. I am here in New York City, about to bring in three of my greatest, loveliest dudes of all time, and we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, so let's get right to it. You know him, you love him, Steven Zadak.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good, man. How are you doing?
Doing good. I got Sabretooth here with me. Hey, Sabretooth.
Oh, hey, Sabretooth. Hey, Sabretooth.
Hi, Sabretooth.
Now, what made you think to bring that guy in the program, Steve?
Usually, spoiler alert, when I'm recording these without cameras, I'm just kind of fiddling around with action figures. So they're strewn around my area.
Look at these juicy behind-the-scenes deets. Speaking of behind-the-scenes, Mr. Eric Siska.
Can you believe this guy? He's got Sabretooth. It's incredible. I'm trying to be like the Regis Philbin of our on-screen live.
Oh, yeah. Everybody needs a Reg, dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. Look at this guy.
Wow, it's a toy.
He's playing with him while he's podcasting.
He plays with himself. This guy, he's a cut-up.
He's a fiddler. He loves the fiddle. Speaking of fiddling.
Too.
Well, speaking of fiddling, diddling, any other idlin, Chris Cabin's here.
Okay.
Look, it's Boxy. I have a thing too. See? Boxy.
Look, it's Boxy. Boxy.
Not a contest, asshole.
Boxy of Wolverine's other arch nemesis.
Well, you know what I got is a stress brick from the TV show Billions. It's been worn off.
Wow. Oh, wow, dude.
Golden brick.
Golden brick of what you'll never earn working at Showtime.
Looks like that thing's getting a lot of workouts, dude.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's incredible.
You can't crush this thing.
You can't crush it. Anyway, let's get right to it. We're got a lot to talk about today, but first, I want to run the numbers. This is Highest Gross. Hollywood Swinger. I'm going to tell you, not a ton of surprises
going
into this week's box office, but a couple things to get out front here, just how the new contenders did this weekend. First of all, Infinity Pool, that was the first one out the gate this weekend. Looking to do about $2.7 million. This was technically a wide release, so not super great, but that's where it's at. At the moment,
so it's
here.
Empty pools around the country right now. I haven't seen
it. Not terrible, but it's a hard sell of a movie, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The trailer looked difficult. I want to see it really badly. I just didn't get to it this week.
Yeah, same. I'm probably going to see it this week, and I am excited.
I did see it. I don't think it's as good as Possessor. I think it's a two steps forward, two steps back situation we have here. I thought Possessor was a huge leap forward from Antiviral. And I think this is just a little bit of a step back from Possessor. It's not as intense. It's a little bit more like it's not. I mean, everybody has been saying it. It goes nowhere. Like the title is kind of like perfect because like it there's no end to it. Like it kind of is just like, there it goes.
Yeah. I see a comment in the chat. Only heard about Infinity Pool through you guys. And that's another thing is the marketing of movies has really fallen flat.
Okay. Well, this is, I'll tell you, this is a tough one, right? Because this literally premiered at Sundance like last week and they do that fucking turnaround, man. And sometimes it's like, oh, wait, it's out? You know, for the average person who's not fucking looking at, you know, release date calendars, it's like, oh, shit, that's already out. I just thought I heard it premiered at Sundance.
Right.
Turnaround.
You'd think it's like, oh, maybe in 7 months I'll see it.
Yeah, exactly. The next one coming in there, of course, was Lucas Don't's Close from A24. That was this one, if you remember the poster from last week. 68K on four screens just in New York and L.A. So not too shabby for Infinity for Close.
I'm shocked it's doing so well because that poster, again, bone chilling.
Well, because you would think it was a horror movie, right?
And it looks like a fucking horror movie.
Everything A24 looks like a horror movie, or they want you to think it might be a horror movie
because it's the fucking genre that sells, man. Yeah. So it's like it's a scotch disingenuous, but it's also really smart. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, the open for the new Mia and Hansen Love, One Fine Morning, four screens, two here in New York and two in LA, took 11.5 for the weekend.
What was that? Somebody's birthday party? They went there and they just brought like 20 friends, and they that's how it worked out.
Yeah, unfortunately, just a little bit of a soft opening. It was just here at Film at Lincoln Center and Film Forum. So hopefully that picks up, because everybody should see fucking Mia Hansen Love movies, man.
I get it. It's not a very exciting movie, like, by no means is it, but it's like the most like by like a widow is like picking up a new life, like her dad is dying and she's starting up a new affair, like it's the most like it's boilerplate, nobody's gonna get out, but it is incredibly well made. And I really do think once, I mean, if you can see it in theaters, I think you should, but once it hits VOD, I think you should really make a point of seeing it. It's very good.
Also, Lea Seydoux as the star. Fantastic. She's incredible. So we'll get to the top five here. Entering the top five for the first week, I got to tell you, I looked this up after seeing that it placed fifth here.
Yeah, me too.
I gotta see this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Pathan, this Indian like spy movie. Mm. Came in here. It's first week, $6 million.
The trailer is very good. I am very excited to check it out, but I didn't hear about it until it made this list.
Well, that's the thing. I think you're now going to, the many things I can give RRR credit for, you are now going to see a renewed interest in, well, I'll just say white audiences wanting to see these movies.
Yeah.
And like going there. And like Pathan is like, that would not have opened like that before RRR.
Definitely not.
There's an AMC where I live in Jersey City, and we have such a huge South Asian population that plays so many of these movies. And like every time I'm like, oh, wow, these look awesome. Yeah. So there's it's interesting that it's happening more widely.
Yeah. And Cabin, you hit the nail on the head. It is all because of RRR. You know, when you see a lot of these South Asian films playing here in the city, you know, it's like, Steve, it's like you said, you know, you'll get a single show time.
Yes.
You know, throughout the week, and those will do business. Like, if you find those movies and look at those numbers,
oh yeah,
they do business. But now I think what you're going to see, like, you know, Pathan here, Pathan, you know, I apologize if I'm pronouncing that wrong, you're going to be seeing like multiple showtimes of this movies. And shit, man, I would love to see just a full screen dedicated to the release of these movies, especially in places like the Empire 25.
Yes.
Yeah. You got, yeah, they call it 25 because there's literally 25 movie theaters in a single complex.
I think they're still playing Black Adam. I'm not even kidding.
It really might be. I mean, that's the thing is, I'm waiting for a big hit from China to do something like RRR, because they have Empire 25 will also get like those random like off like brand Chinese like detective and action movies. Like last year they played Detective vs. Sleuth, is one of my favorite movies of last year. But I do think after RRR, like, I checked out Vikram, which was not a movie that I would have ever looked at before, but just like because I was in the mood, now I'm just paying attention to this more.
Yeah,
which that's awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of paying attention to things, I finally checked this out over the weekend. In number four, our girl Megan.
Here she
coming
is.
In here. Week four, another $6.4 million to Universal. I got to tell you. Nah.
Didn't like it?
Nah, with me and Megan. I'll tell you right now, because you watch this movie, man, and you know, you can see the seams where they cut out that R rating, and it was driving me crazy. Like, you cut your own throat quality-wise to get, you know, you're making a lot of money. Great. You're bringing people to theaters. Great. Subpar content.
Disappointing in terms of the kills. I'm not going to spoil anything, but there was the movie's leading up to an event, and you thought it was going to be a gore fest, and it just kind of it's very anticlimactic.
I'm glad I skipped it in theaters. I'll definitely stream it now that I'm a sucker for a Fandango fucking $20. I love just chucking $20 out the window. It's fantastic. Sure. It's one of my favorite things to do.
I bet.
So did that with I own Pray for the Devil on Vudu. Oh, so nice. I own that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, thankfully, Steve, because I didn't get my buns in the theater for Megan either. Mm-hmm. It is on rental, like on Apple, $19.99 for rental. I don't have to have Megan in my house forever.
There you go.
So there is that. Okay, keeping it going here. Rise in the ranks for his next week of showing here. A Man Called Otto. If
can't
you
can stop
even believe it.
Can't stop that. That's Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm. He's in third in week five.
Grumpy old man here.
Yes. Here's a question. I don't know. When does 80 for Brady open? Is it next week or is it this week?
Coming soon.
It's very soon. Next couple weeks or something.
I just wonder if that's going to do like crazy numbers that we can't even anticipate because these old people are going to the movies.
Possibly.
Also, it might be.
Depends on like where. Like, I maybe New England, like the theaters are packed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I guess Florida now, right? He plays in Florida now, too. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Tampa Bay. This is, it's actually this Friday, February 3rd, 80 for Brady comes out. Let's see. In it? I don't know. I didn't watch the trailer. I would love it if it's like, 80 for Brady, we're going to see Tom Brady at Gillette Stadium. Yeah. And then they get there and it's present day and someone's like, oh man, he planned
Oh, so they all have dementia is what you're saying. Got it.
Or they get there and it's like, oh no, now we have to get on the bus to Florida.
No, I think these old ladies are getting railed. Someone's getting fucking reamed in this movie and I'm excited.
Gronk is getting right in there with Jane Fonda.
You're so big. I'm like, I know what that means.
Dude, they are being ripped through like Kleenex in that movie. I guarantee it. They should just go full on sex scenes, unsimulated.
You usually will have like an Andy Garcia there to be the one who is going to rip it up, so to speak.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think, you know, the funniest thing to do here would definitely get the Westworld Hemsworth to play Tom Brady.
There you go.
And actually have him be a character. That would be funny. And then like,
g'day, ladies.
Maybe he fucks Lily Tomlin. Who knows?
Hey, all right. Coming in at number two, speaking of going through it like toilet paper or Kleenex rather, I guess Puss in Boots, The Last Wish.
Yeah.
Another 10.6 million. Truly unbelievable stuff.
Which I know, Chris, you reviewed it as it sucks, but we had some pushback on that. Some people like this movie.
Well, that's good for them. It's a sucky movie. It looks good. I will give them that.
You know, 80 for Brady might be a sucky movie if he plays his cards right.
Yes, but a big sloppy sucky.
Come on.
Take your dentures after this one.
It's not even 12:15, gumming folks.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
I had to put coffee back in the mug, by the way, in case anyone wondered what was going on there.
Hey, what, look, we're trying to pitch Gum in It with Jane Fonda in the lead. I mean, look, come on. Like, we got to do some work here.
Oh, fuck, I would watch that movie.
See, I absolutely know.
Coming in at number one, no surprises here, Avatar: The Way of Water. If you can even believe it, another 15.7 mil in week 7.
No way. Here's the thing. I am predicting the box office next week. Batista bomb, Knock at the Cabin. Wow. I think it's number one. I think it unseats Avatar.
I could
That's
see
my
that
bold prediction.
Horror is big, and M. Night, you know, definitely resurgence kind of for him.
M. Night Assance, absolutely. And I hope you're right, Steve. That would be awesome. Because I think last year we were sort of saying, oh, maybe it'll be Ant-Man, which is 2 weeks after. But shit, if we can dethrone a little earlier, you know, hey, that's all right with me.
I wouldn't be surprised.
So that's the box office for this weekend, folks. We will see what happens coming up. But we're going to keep just blowing through content here because the big part of this episode, we want to talk about some Oscar nominations here. But before that, a very exciting television program is coming back this March. Let's check out the trailer for it. And you guessed it, trailer segment. That's right, folks. Succession season 4 is starting off March 26th, I believe. What'd you make the banner for if you're not going to use it, asshole? There we go. 3/26 on HBO Max. Let's dive into this trailer here. Take a look at it.
This will be interesting for me. I gave up in season 2.
Really?
Ooh. It's just, it puts me to sleep.
Yeah. Something about, the first season I was a little bit on, and then 2 and 3 on, I was like way in.
It gets so good, dude. I would say give it another shot if you can.
I mean, it's just the performances. Like, that's to me what you're watching. Like, I have my issues with the writing, and there have definitely been episodes where I want to go to sleep, Eric. But,
But all the, like, Adrian Brody stuff last season. Phenomenal.
All the acting has just been out of this world good in this.
What I like about the show mostly is that it really makes all of these people so fucking miserable. And it just like shows that like extreme wealth doesn't exactly equal happiness, but they do enjoy their extreme wealth too. But it's not like Entourage where it's like just like, oh yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's a little different than
that. No, in the back of all of their minds, suicide is always an option.
Right, because they're somehow eviler than Entourage, right?
Well, they got more money than Vincent Chase, so there's that.
Northeast Entourage.
That line, man. Holy shit. And he's great too. What's his face?
McFadden.
Yeah, yeah. Matthew McFadden.
Yeah, I did like him in the first two seasons.
He's so good. Yeah. Great. And I mean, the only Joe Wright movie I actually love is his Pride and Prejudice. And him as Darcy, I thought was fantastic.
Oh, okay. So we kind of already sort of blew through talking about Infinity Pool. So I think we don't need to sort of rehash that. And what are you watching?
Which gem is in the pool? Or is that a spoiler?
You know what? I'll say, Steve, how about this? It's okay. Either blue or green.
Yeah. Oh, you're just going to burst? So you're going to burst there, Steven?
Is green time? And what is blue, Steve?
Oh, I haven't the slightest fucking clue.
Over your card.
But I have spent the last like week and a half watching a bunch of shit at Sundance. And just wanted to recap a couple things here that I think you three guys would also like, as well as the folks watching at home here. But Eric Siska, this one,
yes, sir.
All for you, man.
Ooh, they made it for me.
New Willie Nelson documentary.
Amazing.
Willie Nelson and Family by Oren Moverman and Tom Zinni. No distribution or release plan yet on this guy, but it's like 4.5 hours long. I got to see the first two parts of it.
That's huge. He was my first concert post-pandemic, if you will.
You have a little less than 3 months until 420. Somebody figure it out. Put it out.
Yeah. I know.
Fandango event it.
Yep. Yep. Dude. Yep.
Fathom event of it. I apologize.
Yeah. Fandango. Fathom. Fathom, fine. I'll break my fucking no Fathom rule if you do that, because
all the theaters be like, it's totally cool. Just come on in. And you don't say what's cool, but you just say it's totally cool. Come on in.
Yeah, totally. Like 420 event, Willie Nelson and Family documentary, a little asterisk, and then at the bottom it's like, it's cool.
They should
no narcs.
We need smoking sections again, or like this is a smoking theater. You know, you gotta wait till the 1 o'clock showing. That's in the smoking theater.
I love it.
Yeah. Or at least break like vaping. Like I get if people don't want smoke in the theater.
Sure.
Vapes. So another one that I just watched yesterday that I was completely surprised by, because I did not think it was going to be up my alley at all. It's a new sort of faux doc called Theater Camp, directed by Molly Gordon and Nick Lieberman. Searchlight just picked up this guy for $8 million. And it is about like an upstate New York theater camp that is like falling on hard times. Amy Sedaris plays the leader of the camp, who falls into a coma. And the camp is taken over by her like idiot son, who's played by the guy who was like the big doofus in American Vandal. Ben Platt is one of the counselors. And I have to say, to give it to Ben Platt, he's a dude that I have not liked in a lot of things. That fucking Dear Evan Hansen movie is abysmal shit. But he is really, really funny in this movie. It does the faux doc thing, but it removes talking heads, so it's all like just verite and like intertitles. Very, very funny stuff.
I was excited for a second because you're like, Amy Sedaris. I'm like, yeah, finally the Amy Sedaris assault is in a coma. And I'm like,
she does have a couple of really funny moments, but yes, she's not in the movie a ton, unfortunately.
I'm just glad that Molly Gordon's doing stuff. Molly Gordon's been a great actress for a while. She's in Shiva Baby. She was in Bujalski's There last year. She's really fantastic.
Booksmart she's in as well. She's one of the friends in Booksmart. AAA, I think, is the character's name or something. Be on the lookout for that. I don't know what they're going to do with it. Maybe later this year. Speaking of, I don't know what they're going to do with it and later this year, a new one from Australia, our friends down under. And speaking of Sarah Snook, the new film Run Rabbit Run, directed by Dana Reed. Netflix picked this up for an undisclosed amount.
I know.
Just like Andrew, everything with Netflix, it's undisclosed.
This one's about Elmer Fudd. Is that right?
That's right. It's the Elmer Fudd biopic. He's fucking killing rabbits left and right until he comes across his mortal enemy, Bugs Bunny.
It's not the John Updike thing either. He's not doing it.
No.
Not an aging basketball player. We're not doing that.
No. This is Sarah Snook from Succession plays a mother who's got an eerie fucking kid. But the nice twist of this is the eerie kid might be linked to the mother's fucked up past. It didn't play well for a ton of folks I saw seeing it. I don't think it's a perfect movie, but Sarah Snook is absolutely fantastic in
it. Yeah, and for more eerie kids, take a look at the poster again for Close.
Very eerie kid.
Bring that up again, Eric, because you're right. We just want to make sure reminding people out there, this isn't a horror movie. It's about a fucking sad as hell tragedy.
Yeah.
Not an eerie kid movie. But if you see this, eerie kid.
Eerie kid, sad kid. Eerie kid, sad kid. Eerie kid, sad kid. Eerie kid. Eerie kid, sad kid. Where's the sad kid? There we go.
Yeah,
then we did it.
Good job.
Are we? Yeah, no, this is terrifying. I watched it late at night. Eerie shit.
I'm
not
so
great,
glad we have the video element to cut between those.
Mm-hmm. okay, so here we go. The big thing we wanted to get to today. That's right. The Academy Award nominations came out literally the day after last week's broadcast, so we didn't get a chance to talk about it then.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to watch the Oscars.
Ooh, yeah, Steven Seagal getting ready for the Oscars. Hope I don't get robbed at a liquor store.
This is so fucking exciting, movie, folks. Hollywood's biggest night. They're doing it again. They've brought it back for you, for your enjoyment. This is very exciting.
You can even believe it. I think it's Sunday, March 12th is the, I'm sure to be, horrendous broadcast. But we'll go through just a couple of the categories here. We're not going to get into the weeds too much, but we'll start off with Best Supporting Actress. You had Angela Bassett for Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. You got Hong Chau for The Whale, Carrie Condon for The Banshees of Inisherin, Jamie Lee Curtis for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Stephanie Hsu for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Would not be surprised for Carrie to take it away.
That would be nice.
She's incredible in that movie.
Yeah, I would think it's probably a two-woman race between Carrie Condon and Angela Bassett is my guess.
That sounds right.
One of the two will win. My snub, I saw caught Women Talking this weekend. I liked the movie quite a bit. Not my favorite movie of the year, which was Banshees of Inisherin. But I think Jesse Buckley is absolutely one of my favorite performances as a Best Supporting Actress of the year. And that's, it's kind of nuts she didn't get attention.
Well, it's weird that, like, I think that all counts. The fact that so many good performances by women were in that one movie, like, it just canceled them all out. Like, you can't nominate. It has to be an ensemble piece.
Good point, Chris. Cast less women in your movies.
This is what we're trying to say. This is the message we are trying to tell everybody. If you want to really push the art form forward, less women.
So let's see here. Moving on to supporting actor. Brendan Gleeson for The Banshees of Inisherin, Brian Tyree Henry for Causeway, Judd Hirsch coming in for The Fablemans, Barry Keoghan coming in for The Banshees of Inisherin, and Kihei Kwan for Everything Everywhere All at Once. What are you saying, Kevin?
I kind of think you got to go with Kwan here.
Same. Yeah.
I think you really do have to go that way. I mean, like, I would love it to go to almost anybody here. I haven't seen Causeway yet.
No one has.
A lot of people I know have. That's the thing.
And is that right? Okay.
I haven't gotten around to it.
I have heard good things, to be fair. I was making a joke, but I've heard good things.
It's not something that grabbed me from the description. And I like Jennifer Lawrence and Brian Tyree Henry. It's just, it's not enough. Whereas, like, all these others, I'm like, those were incredible performances, each one of them.
Two things. One, to answer someone in the chat, I was fixing my light fixture because it kept falling for a second there. Okay. Two, and Eric will agree, I liked Judd Hirsch in that movie because it's a period piece and it's back when you had scary grandparents, right?
Like, absolutely.
Scary relative who's shaking you and stuff.
Yeah, that's like, a knock on the door you don't want is Grandpa Hirsch showing up.
Ripping his shirt and yelling at you.
Oh, absolutely, man.
I mean, from the circus.
I am pretty confident I was yelled at by my grandfather one time in my life, and it still shakes me to my fucking core. It shakes me to my core.
I remember calling my grandfather in Chicago, and this was like, 1990 or something. And my parents just had me call initially, and he answered the phone. Sure, Dime, start talking.
Oh, wow.
Scared the shit out of me. And then I was like, Dimes? What is he talking about? It took me years to realize it was payphone jargon and also out of date payphone jargon.
Yes.
So you think you would have been less confused if your grandfather picked up the phone and was like, yeah, you dialed 1010-220. It's on you.
Yeah. Did he have a phone booth in his house? Was he actually putting dimes in there? Or
he was a deranged man. Could you believe? Okay. No, I'm kidding. He was okay. Didn't really know him that well, but scary and abrasive, sort of. Sure, like I will become, you know.
Okay. That's the goal.
Role model.
Will become. let's see. Let's get over to the other side here. Let's see. We got a leading actress, Cate Blanchett for Tar, Ana de Armas.
You could stop reading. I think Tar is going to win.
Yeah.
Andrea Riseborough for Two Leslie, Michelle Williams for The Fabelmans, and Michelle Yeoh for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Is this the first time in Oscar history two Michelles have been nominated at the same
time?
That's
a good question.
Possible?
Is it the first time that a woman in an absolutely dog shit movie was nominated? Because why is Blonde anywhere? And she is fine in it. She's totally fine in it. But that movie is absolute dog shit. Still, how do you put it near
I
the odds?
Still haven't, but this almost made me think, is everyone wrong? No, I'm sure they're not. You saw it, Steve?
I did see it. Chris, you saw it too, right?
Yeah, I saw it.
I mean, like, it's taken a lot of swings for sure. And again, I don't think she's not bad. She's definitely the best part of the movie for sure.
Yeah.
Without her, it's totally unwatchable, but even still.
Steve, can I ask you this? Because I think I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, what is something that can help me decide whether or not I see this movie?
Mm-hmm.
You see her going downtown on JFK or what?
You do, while he's watching. I'm watching B movies, getting a BJ.
Do you see Shaft?
I forget.
No, you don't.
Oh,
it's okay. Just.
Oh,
sort
is
of
he
like...
watching Shaft? Is that where you were asking?
Yeah, that's what
that
was.
Oh, no, he was long dead before that came out. Never mind.
I wish I was that guy.
What a great nickname.
He's so cool.
No, actually, Shaft was the family name. I forgot about that. John Shaft. Yeah, I think, you know, Cate Blanchett, Eric, to your quip, probably. Yeah. But the other side of
Michelle
Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh.
Yes. Yeah, Michelle Yeoh.
The other side is
she could win it.
Sure, yes.
Are you sure that Riseborough can't pull it? Because that would make me laugh for about a year. If she,
I mean,
all of this actually culminates in her fucking taking the prize.
What even happened? What? No, money changed hands.
No
money. I don't know what we're
it's
losing.
It's a non-controversy.
It's a non-controversy.
It's like she essentially did what Melissa Leo did, but in a smaller way, much smaller way.
And like no one saw the movie, but everyone's mad about it. Like there was like fucking briefcases full of cash.
Yeah. It's
The people that are most mad about it are the fuckers that literally spend those briefcases full of cash on all these campaigns to get the nominations. And this was a non-campaign. It was just a couple of tweets or internet vids or whatever. Yeah. And like, hey, man, sorry you got a fucking bee in your bonnet about that and didn't think of it yourself. But like, come on. And now we're having like some sort of Oscar board trial, like it's the fucking Hague. Like, give me a break.
Ridiculous. Absolutely.
You
know,
and you're just like putting a very good actress through a really shitty situation. So
totally.
Congratulations.
Totally. And also, the folks that are like, oh, well, you know, she wasn't nominated. So and so should have been nominated. Hey, you're totally right. And you know what that's also true for? Literally everyone else that got a nomination.
Yes.
So that is a non-argument there as well. I'm sorry. Yeah. It is. Yep. Like, whatever. And you know what? Maybe someday I'll see the movie, but who the shit knows? And I think, to Chris, to your point, that's the other thing about it. It's like, yeah, this nomination happened, but like, they ain't watching that movie. And all these like voters that are all pissed off, they're not going to watch it. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't see it happening. I think it's really a toss up between Michelle and Cate. Michelle Yeoh, I should say.
Yes.
Michelle Williams, who I thought was fine playing Mitzi fucking Cableman there.
I thought that was a really good performance, but it's Blanchett or Yeoh. That's just how it is.
Then over to the lead actor side of things here. We got Austin Butler for Elvis, Colin Farrell for Banshees, Brendan Fraser for The Whale, Paul Mescal for Aftersun, and Bill Nighy for Living.
Wait, what?
He got nominated just for being alive?
Potentially.
I mean...
Yeah, pretty much.
There's your Andrea Riseborough. Like, find me anyone. Here's something. Next year, most of the people that liked Living will not be living.
Yep. There you go. Put that as a poster.
Sure.
See it while you can. You'll be dead.
It's a movie. Nobody was a remake of Ikiru. Nobody was asking for that. But also, who saw this movie?
Nobody.
I think less people saw that movie than saw To Leslie. I genuinely think that. I just don't understand it. Like,
but we know who Bill Nighy is, so it's okay. You know what I mean? And like, it's a kind of a career thing, which is fine. I love Bill Nighy in general. You know what I mean?
Over Paul Dano, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
This is also, there's a lot of great nominations here though. I think any one of these guys could win it, because Paul's great in After Sun, Brendan in The Whale, Colin, obviously, and Austin Butler. What a fucking career making performance.
Absolutely. Yes, I think absolutely. if I had to put money on it, probably Colin Farrell again.
I would
career-ishly, but I mean, Brendan, Austin Butler, I think, has some heat too.
I think Butler might be something here.
I think it's three with Colin, Butler, and Brendan, because Brendan has the prestige, but like, that's the vote of like, we love this guy, let's give him this. That he gets that vote. Colin has the heat. He's just coming off Golden Globes and all that shit. But like, Austin Butler, that performance, him and Tom Hanks dueling makes that movie what it is. And it's like the best thing Baz Luhrmann's made maybe ever.
Yeah.
Romeo and Juliet gets a lot of points just because he used the text of Romeo and Juliet. So it sounds good. But this one, like, is genuinely him. And I'm like, this is everything I wanted. And like, I can't get over that performance.
Can I say something that I'm not trying to be flippant here. It does sound, this might sound a little gauche, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I think the death of Lisa Marie Presley may help Austin Butler in this, because
it might be true.
There's that whole thing. There's the sympathy there. He's talked, you know, extensively about how close they were, how much she loved the performance, you know, so like her untimely passing may have like sort of turned heads back towards the movie in a way, you know. I don't know. And, I know it sounds shitty, but it's a shitty fucking business.
But you know, and most of the Academy voters, you know, probably knew Elvis or something. You know, they're old enough that they were like, are hanging around at that.
They're friends with the fucking Colonel, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's a big up in the air. I think as far as Paul Mescal, as fabulous as he is in After Sun, that's just kind of a nice like, hey man, welcome to the party.
Yeah.
I kind of also, I mean, like, I kind of think he's more of a supporting performance, but it's nice that he got nominated.
Totally. Moving over to the directorial side of things here, Martin McDonagh for Banshees, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinart for Everything Everywhere, Senior Spielbergo for The Fablemans, Todd Field for Tar, Ruben Östlund for Triangle of Sadness. That's the big question mark one for me. I don't know what that's doing there.
I could see Elvis in that slot instead.
Sarah Polley would be welcome there for Women Talking as well.
Because with Women Talking, I mean, that's a ton of really great performances to manage the directing for.
Yes, for sure.
You know what I mean? Which is a fucking feat. There's not a ton else going on in that movie.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's kind of a difficult thing. Like, how do you nominate it? But that's why I think, like, for directorial at least, she should have been right in there, because she's directed, you know, a bevy of really kick-ass performances in that movie.
But like Triangle of Sadness, I mean, my criticism of it from the beginning was, this is exactly the kind of like satire of rich people that rich people fucking love. Like, right. Yeah. Like, and that's so, and it's like, this proves my point more than anything, that the fucking Academy was like, oh yes, oh, give it to us, roast us, King.
I do. I mean, I think that's, to be fair, I think that's the menu more than Triangle of Sadness. I think Triangle of Sadness is a little more teeth. I know you have a problem with the last moments of it. I kind of like it.
I also kind of think it's a little, it's like nominating Meet the Fockers for directing. Because it's that Ben Stiller gross out humor that's inside this like fake parasite sheen. I don't know. The movie kind of did rub me a little wrong, but I understand liking it. I think there are great things in it, but personally, me, I'm Tar Sweep. I want Tar Sweep, baby.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. You want the Academy Awards to be tarred and feathered?
That's Tar was the most engrossing movie of the year.
I loved it.
I mean, like, it's the performance for sure. Performances, people who weren't nominated as well. But like the direction of that movie, it just draws you in. And like, we're talking about a movie about a fucking composer. You know what I mean? Like, this is not exactly a movie about spies or something like that. But it draws you in.
A composer who is very much real, by the way. Yes. Lydia Tarr, we love you.
Real person.
Yep. She's in Newsweek every week. Just has an opinion column there.
It was a really great biopic.
I think Field probably, he might take it. Like, I really do think he might take it.
I'd be cool with that. I'd be very cool with that.
That'd be fine with me. I would like Spielberg to win for this because I think it's a very personal film for him. And like, I think that's, but, and it's he's won my before, favorite right? of the year. But yeah, he's won before. I don't think he needs another one on there. Field did, this is a hell of a turn from Little Children. So I kind of have to give it to him on that one.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. That's a PU on Little Children. Although, isn't Todd Field like, hasn't he been nominated for all three movies that he's directed?
Oh, he wasn't misnomer. He was not nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Twister. He was not nominated for that.
He should have been.
He should have been. When he yells out, it's not a moon, it's a space station. We know. We love. Everybody loves that line. That line.
For sure. No, because In the Bedroom, was he nominated for that or no? I don't remember.
They all got nominations for sure.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like, you know, Todd Field, he's that like rare director that's kind of like some sort of like, you know, ancient insect. Yeah. Like, it comes up out of the ground every fucking 15, 16 years, does some damage.
Okay. He was nominated writing adapted screenplay for Little Children. And then he was nominated, Best Picture for In the Bedroom and writing. Did not win any of them.
Got it. No stranger to nominations here, so I guess we'll see. So here we go, the big one, all 10 titles, folks. Best Picture, we got All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. Crowded field here.
It's all 10.
And I think it's a real... I think it's one of two ways. It's either one of the ones that you definitely think, or fucking All Quiet on the Western Front and everyone shits their pants.
Right. Yeah.
It better not be. I just watched All Quiet on the West. I swear to God.
No good. Fucking,
no, it's look, if you are really, if you were really in the need for another fucking World War movie, either one, I don't care at this point.
OG or the sequel.
Yeah, either one. Like, yeah, go ahead, find it. It's very gory.
The
it
sequel. Yeah. By the way, World War II, that's like the Terminator 2 of wars.
It is. Yes. It really is.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
I see what you're saying, and it's true.
Also like,
yeah, your foster parents are dead.
Because I killed them.
Call to John now. Now. My guess would be it's Everywhere Everything. It doesn't win for directors. They're never going to give the two directors that.
You think so?
They got to print two trophies.
You know? They might switch it up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, flip it, like, you know, Fable, either yes. Spielberg or Todd Field, and then they put Everything Everywhere, and like, maybe Michelle Yeoh wins, maybe not. Definitely Daniel Dae-Kwan. You know what I mean? Like, that's my guess is how Everything Everywhere has a mini sweep. Oh, yeah.
I'm predicting Tar.
Ooh, I love this Tar sweep.
Go ahead. I think it's one of two. It's either Tar or it might be Top Gun Maverick.
Really?
That would be something.
They might do it. If it was going to happen, it would happen for this movie.
Well, but you know, maybe there's enough vile Scientologists voting in this process.
I just there's something about it. Like, I don't think Banshees is going to take it, and I don't think Avatar is going to take it.
Yeah,
but like, well, everywhere, Everything Everywhere also just seems like, for the old voters, it seems like a little too much. I'll say, like, I think people will watch that and be like, I don't know, this seems like for kids. I don't know.
It could be Fablemans if you're expecting the old,
you know.
But that's what I thought Tar would take. I think Tar would get the old people and also get like the new or Todd Field.
Because remember, Tar did kind of okay in that limited release to like you know, smaller like indie houses and like metropolitan art theaters where you do see a lot of old fuckers come through those doors. I think though, Chris, something you were saying inspired this thought in me. This could be a year where the thing that they give Best Picture to is something that wins absolutely nothing.
Triangle sadness, probably, maybe.
Oh, what? That would be something.
I could see it happen.
I would throw up and shit my pants.
I would lose my mind.
I like that movie more than you folks, but I totally agree.
Yeah,
I absolutely.
By the way, you know, speaking of Top Gun Maverick again, we did a full length episode on that on Patreon, patreon.com/wehatemovies, and we had a lot of fun talking about that movie, which, yes, made by evil people, but it's a fun movie.
Oh, they're all made by evil people. Stop it.
I know they are. That's true. That's why they're movies.
So, yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. You know, of course, we will be talking about the aftermath on our March, what would that be, 13th episode of On Screen Live. So who knows? We'll have to see.
Hopefully another slap this year, right?
Oh, you think another slap, dude? Oh, God, I don't know.
You got to spice it up. Last year you had a slap. Maybe this year a punch. Maybe a fucking roundhouse kick in 2024.
How about this? I think let's go the other way. Let's dial down the temperature in the room. Someone accidentally, while going to start their acceptance speech, just cuts a gnarly loud fart.
Ooh, I like
it. And it gets picked up on the mic.
I love
that. And we're all talking about the fart the next day.
Yeah, like okay. Russell Crowe is presenting an award or something.
Oh,
and
yeah,
just like,
sure.
Like the tails of his tuxedo fly up in the air.
But because it's Russell Crowe, he does a full-on leg lifter. Like, a real...
Absolutely. Russell Crowe will fart at the Academy Awards and not give a fuck if you know about it.
A four-scale wind of four Foster's beers just pushing itself out his ass all at once.
Oh, man. Now I am really hoping for the fact that we get to talk about the fart on the Monday after the Oscars.
It has to happen. If anyone listening to this works at the Academy, make it happen somehow.
I also think Tom Cruise slapping Kevin Feige for some reason sounds great.
Yeah.
Just, you know, if you want good television, and that's what the Rock and Will Smith thing was, get that going.
If Tom Cruise smacked Kevin Feige in the face, he'd knock that motherfucker into phase seven.
Good. Do it,
speaking of Russell Crowe, though, we do have to start wrapping it up here, but we want to plug some stuff that we got going on in-house this week at the WHM Factory, folks. Now, if you missed our Thor Love and Thunder show, that was last Thursday. And by the way, big thanks to everybody who came out to watch us live. That was a lot of fun. Both the show and the after party Q&A kind of thing, that was a lot of fun also. But this is rebroadcast. You can get the replay still, the full thing, at moment.co/wehatemovies. All that you can find on whmpodcast.com.
That's right.
Tickets still available through Thursday, right?
Thursday. I think it might be Thursday evening, but you know, be on the safe side. Get your tickets now. Experience the show now while it's still available, because it's disappearing.
Yeah, it's going to go away.
That's right. And so tomorrow, we're wrapping up the worst of the previous year month, which thankfully we bought ourselves an extra week so we could cram in a convo about Black Adam. Holy shit. And I'm going to get into editing this right after the broadcast. Looking forward to it. It was a good-ass time. It was an in-studio episode.
Well, what you should work on, Andrew, is finding a catchphrase. Yep.
That's
the way you want to do it. Yep. You got to make sure you find a catchphrase in the show for us to use.
Steve is shuddering at the thought of a catchphrase.
Just one quick thing on this feed. Thank you all. We listener quest month is now closed. Thank you all for your requests. We will announce the winners and what the March lineup will be on this feed sometime in February. So keep looking out on the on screens, folks. Keep watching these.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And we should say also, you know, while we're talking about that, subscribe to this channel, folks. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you click that little bell, get that notification, that sweet, sweet ding.
Ring the bell.
In your ear, on your phone, every time we go live, schedule something to go live. You want to know about it. So like and subscribe below and share this shit around, man. We are, we're very pleased with, let's call it the ratings of this so far, and we're going to keep going with it. Mm-hmm. It's really awesome that so many folks are finding it, and we want even more folks to find it. So spread the word about that. Now, let's see here. We got a couple more things. Oh, Friday, for all you Patreon subscribers out there, and if you're not yet, like Eric mentioned earlier, patreon.com/wehatemovies. We got a We Love Movies episode dropping on Friday, because if you can even believe it, January is done. Mm-hmm. Wednesday, February starts, which means we are be talking about The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
On WLM.
This is a Big lot of fun. We already recorded it. Oh, yeah. It is a really good time. I even talk about the Jesus Rolls a little bit in there, the quote-unquote spiritual sequel. I guess it's a legacy sequel in a way.
It is. Eric paid the ultimate sacrifice to watch the Jesus Rolls.
Mm-mm. Don't do it, folks. Mm. But no, watch The Big Lebowski and tune into our discussion on it on Friday.
That is right. So you know what, folks? That's going to do it for On Screen Live for this week. Big thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a great week. And what we're going to end with, in case anyone out there still curious, you know, about this live show that we keep talking about on Thor 4, we're going to end the show here with a clip from the show. So you get a little taste of what was going on, how it looked, all that stuff. If you've never done a We Hate Movies live show before virtually, this will be 2 minutes of your time worth checking out. So we're going to wrap it here. Until next week, folks, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadek.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
Have a great week and enjoy this clip from our Thor Grab Ass and Cancer live show. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody. What were you saying, Steve?
No, this movie's terrible. It's totally. Very...
We should say, first of all, before we get into it, I mean, Thor Love and Thunder from last year, 2022, directed... for some reason, by Taika Waititi.
Oh, yeah.
Ragnarok is totally fine. It's not
totally
great.
Fine.
It's not.
Yeah.
People really like it. People really love it. That's fine, too. Yep. I just kind of like it. I think it's a bit of a disjointed mess. But it actually like had this thing where like they figured out what to do with Thor, and they made him into like a Kurt Russell-esque kind of.
Yep.
Like the odds are against me and we're going to do it anyway kind of a guy.
Right.
And then in this movie, he's.
Stupid.
He's dumb as shit and the big as a brick shit house. Yep. He's a little too big in this movie, honestly. Like it's
a little too jacked.
He's a little too juiced.
Looks a little fake. It looks a little fake, especially when the flick happens. I was just like that.
Oh, no, that's all him.
I know it is all him, but it is so him that it looks like I can't imagine getting in that kind of shape, and that's my fault. That's the fault of me.
But you know, Chris, you know, we like to say it's okay to like a movie.
Sure
so
is.
People actually enjoy this movie, that it's totally fine.
Sure.
To compliment this movie, I couldn't believe the performance. Christian Bale. First he was Vice President Dick Cheney, and now he's Al Gore.
Come on.
Gore?
Jesus Christ, man.
That was all morning, wasn't it, Eric? This is all the work.
You know what, Chris Cavett? That was two pots of coffee.
We are. If Al Gore got the fucking the Necro Sword, I'm gonna start cutting off the heads of all these climate polluters. I am sick of it.
Here comes someone driving down the road in a Hummer. Better kill him with my God-killing sword.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.